Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, we're finally officially to the offseason. The Super Bowl is in the rearview mirror, and what a great game it was. I'm sure you're enjoying all the Philadelphia fans up there in your area just languishing in the wind.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable game. I mean, that's somewhat of a common misconception, like that there really isn't the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia rivalry. They're 6 hours away. We're in the same state, but the hockey teams don't like each other, don't get me wrong. But all in all, I mean, it's not like anyone around here. Trust me, everyone around here was rooting against the Patriots. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's probably true. That makes sense. it was a great game. So enjoyable. We've already kind of been in rookie mode here anyway, as we've entered the dynasty offseason. But now that everybody is in offseason mode, we can fully appreciate it. We're going to continue talking rookies today, talking the 2018 class. And we've got an awesome guest, Travis May. He's one of my coworkers over at DLF. He's also a senior writer and editor for Fantasy Authority and one of the hosts of the Dynasty Life Pod, which I've got a chance to guest on a couple of times. Travis, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Just great to be here. And thanks for the invite. I always love talking rookies. And I mean, as soon as the Super Bowl is over, it's now draft time for the next few months. So better buckle up and get ready, because that's why we're here now. So
that's it. You've got an extensive article over at DLF. It's actually a couple weeks old now, I guess, but it's the top 100 dynasty rookies for 2018. I do my rankings at DLF as well. I think I have my top 50 overall posted, but the top 100 is a major task to take on. I know that is a ton of work for you.
Oh yeah. I really love it though. I spent a lot of time doing Devy and digging deep in that regard, looking at college players, you know, really back to when they first entered college, you know, in the recruiting profile days, and checking out 24/7 sports and rivals and things like that, all the way to when they become a pro. So it just kind of made sense for me to just dig a little bit deeper, even further, and just get to 100, because that's a nice round number and people like to people just like lists. So it seems like it's just easy to digest that way. So
I did 10 years at ESPN, and they are kind of the masters of lists. I read so many lists. And the key is, I'm sure you found this, is people be like, how could you have him 65th? He should be 58. Oh, I mean, the difference really isn't that big.
No. Now, once you get down that far, it's like, I'm sorry. I had no idea that I had him two or three spots too low, and you know, 78th versus 81st or something. I legit, every single time I've done this, I've had people point that out. Like, what changed from now, like between like the November version and the January version? Yeah. And they're like, well, what changed between now and then? Like, he's like three ranks different. Overthinking this a little bit.
I feel like every time I look at my rankings, whether it's rookie rankings or just general dynasty rankings, I think I could change them every time I look at them. So, when you've got an extensive list like that has to be understandable. And we really want to.
Even since I came out with this one just 2 weeks ago, it's changed. So it's just, I think this time of year, it's important to stay fluid and stay just open to new information, because we still have a lot of time.
Well, we're not going to focus too much on exactly where you have these players ranked. We're not going to nitpick too much, but we do want to pick your brain on a few players. Before we get to some of those specific players, how do you use this list? Do you view this list as essentially a draft cheat sheet almost? Is this how you would draft these players as of now, at least?
Yeah, as of right now, generally it's how I would draft if it was a one quarterback league, no extra positional premiums beyond maybe just PPR. That's about it. But this is pretty much my big board, just at least a snapshot of what that was a couple weeks ago anyway. So, yeah, just it's a lot that's going to change, but this is pretty much my big board overall in terms of where I would take them in a rookie draft for dynasty leagues.
The thing I really like about this list is that you have it broken down into tiers, not just 100 players, which would be a lot to consume, but you do have your tiers there. And in the top tier all by himself is, of course, Saquon Barkley. No surprise there. The question with him is, did he be the top or anything like that? It's more trying to decide how to value him versus the other players already in the league. We have our new DL dynasty mocks going right now, and he is sitting right there at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round. So he's already being valued essentially as a top 13, 14 overall player.
Yeah, that's incredible. And the Dynasty Life podcast, we were actually just talking about this week, the new elite, like the new top 12 running backs in fantasy football. And spoilers here, but I think I don't know when you guys released this, but Saquon went RB5 in our rankings. Wow. That we kind of put together. I mean, you've got your Todd Gurley, you have David Johnson, you have Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott. And then after that, Justin, one of the co-hosts of the Dynasty Life pod, was like, you know what? I mean, if we just look at his value right now and where he's going and startup mocks and how dominating he is in the rookie draft stratosphere, it's just like, I mean, he's right there. So I think that's about right. End of first, beginning of second round. And there's really no question as to who the first pick is going to be in basically all rookie drafts. Even 3 months from now, like 4 months, six months ahead of time, it kind of felt like we already knew it was already a foregone conclusion that it was going to be Saquon Barkley, which is just incredible.
How do you compare him? I've heard people say this, and I think I'm a believer that he's the best running back prospect I've ever seen. How did you compare him to Zeke or Gurley when they were coming out? I mean, some of the top guys that were pretty clearly going to be 1-1.
I mean, it's fresh on everyone's mind right now because, you know, Ezekiel Elliott just came out and he was the dominating guy, especially when he landed on the Cowboys. But everybody knew he was just the best back in his class. But imagine that, and then you add better receiving chops to that. So the expectations just got out of hand. I don't know if I would say that he's definitively like 100% the best running back I've really ever tried to break down, but man, he's definitely way up there. So you can pick him apart, and he's going to get picked apart because he has some bad reps here and there, but man, he's unbelievable.
Travis, your second tier, you also have one player all by himself. It's Darius Geis, the running back from LSU. It seems like most people have a huge gap, despite how talented Geis is, a huge gap between Barkley and Geis. So do you see the larger gap between the 1 and 2 players or Geis and that next tier you have?
I definitely see a wider gap in between Geis and the rest of everybody else than I do between Geis and Saquon Barkley. And I think it's because for me, as just a pure, like, in between the tackles runner, I think Barkley and Geis are actually very close. I really wish Geis would have had more work in the passing game so we'd be able to see a better sample size in that regard. And it was really frustrating for Geis to not be, you know, way up there in the stats column all season long because he just wasn't himself. He was not 100% healthy this past season. And so with just the overall consensus perception, it was easy for that gap to widen because, well, Barkley was seemingly 100% healthy and Geis was not. And so it's just, I think that is probably, that's probably not fair to Geis. And so I think at the beginning of the season, there was a legitimate question, which one do you prefer? Even though Saquon Barkley had the better receiving chops already and had shown that in a pretty significant sample, it was still really, really close. And I think it still is really close for me too. The only question I really have is he going to be a guy that can catch 30, 40, 50 balls a year like I think Barkley can? And that's really my only concern. I think when you have a healthy, angry Darius Geis, he is impossible to bring down. And so from that point of view, I think he might just have the edge. If you just take out any receiving game, he might have an edge on Barkley to me, which might seem blasphemous to the consensus, but I don't really care.
All right, Travis, your third tier of players, you label these guys the sure things, which that kind of gives me a little bit of confidence in these players. You have six players in this group: James Washington, Courtland Sutton, Ronald Jones II, Calvin Ridley, Nick Chubb, and Sonny Michel. So a little bit of a split there between the running backs and wide receivers. All of those players are interesting. Obviously, dynasty owners are looking at those players as first-round targets. We're going to hear a little bit more about those. Ronald Jones II playing out there on the West Coast, even for a big school like USC. I didn't get to see quite as much of him maybe as some of these other guys. So let's hear your take on Jones there.
Yeah, so Ronald Jones, he may have actually just moved up even further on this board for me in the past couple of weeks as I've been doing more and more breaking down and charting of these top guys, taking an even closer look. And I'll do that for the next couple months. And so this will definitely shuffle back and forth. But I think when you look at Ronald Jones and you break down every aspect of his draft profile, if you want to call it that, the only concern that a lot of people have that people beat into the ground over and over and over again is his, you know, his BMI, his weight, his height to weight ratio and his build. Is that going to sustain? And so that's my only question. When I look at Ronald Jones, can he be a feature back? Because if I'm taking him in the first half of the first round of my drafts, my rookie drafts, I want him to be that feature potential. Because, I mean, if you look at his BMI, even if he added like 5 pounds, he would still be only on par with the build of like Christian McCaffrey, which is weird. He doesn't actually look like that. But that's my only concern. And I want to say that first, because everything else I'm going to say is just fantastic about him. I mean, he forces missed tackles at an unbelievable rate. I believe he, according to Pro Football Focus, I was just looking at that information here recently, and I believe he was second in terms of just on running plays, missed tackles forced in the country this year. I think that's one thing. People see him as a sprinter, but he's much more than that. He can wiggle past you. He doesn't have to make an outstanding, crazy jump cut. He's got elite speed that if he just sidesteps for a half second, for a millisecond, he's going to be beyond you. So I think a lot of times, even when he does take some kind of contact up the middle or some kind of contact on the edge, he just bounces off of that contact easier than you would think for a smaller guy. So the yardage that
Sorry, you broke up there. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the comparison I've heard, I want to hear if you think it's apt, is Jamaal Charles. And yes, you mentioned McCaffrey. One thing I was saying a year ago that worried me with McCaffrey, not as a football player, but as a fantasy player, how many touchdowns is he going to score? You know, do you have those concerns with Jones too?
Yeah. Do I think he can really hold up? Do I think he can really be a feature back? I think that's the main question, I guess, with him. And I guess that is a little bit concerning. But I do like that comp of Jamaal Charles. I was saying that probably over a year ago. Although I don't think he's going to run a sub 4.4 like a lot of people would like him to. In high school, he ran like a 4.45, but he was even skinnier. I think he's probably going to run about the same. He's probably not going to get a whole lot faster. But I remember back this last year, Adoree Jackson said something about him and Ronald Jones. And even though Adoree's really fast, Ronald Jones still had the edge on Adoree Jackson. So I thought that was interesting. Adoree was like supposedly the fastest guy on the team, but Ronald Jones is one of the fastest players in the country. And if he can use that speed to offset the fact that he's just a tad undersized, I can be excited about that. And I can definitely comp him in a positive way and just say, maybe he's not Jamaal Charles, but maybe he's just a little bit below what he was coming out.
So it seems like once you get to that 1.03 spot, which is where this tier begins, it really is wide open. You've got some people pushing for Jones, some for Chubb or Washington, Sutton, Michelle, really all the guys in this tier, and even some of the players in the next tier. But from 1.3 really to the end of the second round, you're seeing very little difference in value. And I've even seen Ridley, who you have here in your third tier already fall to the second round of a couple of our mocks that we're running. So the value is just really all over the board right now.
Yeah.
It's going to be very similar to last year. You can't assume a player is going to fall. If you like a guy, you're almost just going to have to take him. And of course the combine and obviously the draft will shake this out a little bit.
A quick question for both of you. Do you agree that if you can get in the top eight, you're pretty happy this year? You know, like there's a gap between eight and nine. I mean, obviously this list sort of implies that, but it seems like it's pretty steep from what I'm looking at.
For me, yeah, that's the line right now. I think, Ryan, I think you and I have talked about this every year, though. The draft fixes that, though. The draft fixes that and adds one or two to that back end of the tier. And so there's going to be some crazy, amazing, at least on paper, landing spot that happens that's going to shove somebody else into that tier. And it could be, you know, that it's 10 spots deep, which is crazy because last year it felt like the point of, you know, that line was pick five, pick six, and then the draft added a couple. So this seems like it could be a deeper draft class. But right now, yeah, I think when I look at it, it's, you know, Saquon Barkley, Darius Geis, James Washington, Courtland Sutton, Ronald Jones, Calvin Ridley, Nick Chubb, and Sony Michel. And then there is, to me, a pretty clear drop in terms of just my questions that I have with the next guys. That's really what it is. I like a lot of the next tier in just a big way, but there's just one or two more questions I have for sure with each one of those than I do any of the top eight.
Brian, are you on board with that?
For the most part, my tiers probably look a little bit different. A couple of the players that Travis has in his fourth tier, I like a little bit more. But what Travis said there is exactly right. And this time of year, early in the offseason, we need to be taking advantage of those presumed tiers because they are going to change. They're going to change after the combine, and they're certainly going to change after the draft. So if people are discounting the 1.03 right now, because it's not Barkley and it's not Geis, then that's a pick to target because somebody is going to land in a great spot, like Travis said. And whether that actually proves to be a major fantasy asset or not, that pick will rise in value. And if Travis is right about the 1.08 kind of being the end of the tier, then I want to buy the 1.09 because somebody's going to land in a great spot. Maybe one of the players that we're about to talk about.
Very cool. Hey, before we do though, I want to tell everyone about Wink. We mentioned at the last podcast, so they're a new sponsor of ours, a very cool service. I don't know if any of you guys are in the same boat I am, but I like red wine. I'm not much of a white wine drinker. But you walk in the liquor stores, or here in PA, they just have liquor stores. I mean, they're not, you can't get them in grocery stores and all those things. And there's just a wall of red wine, and I have no idea what I want. And you ask somebody, and they ask you a couple boring questions. Do you like dry? Do you like sweet? And it doesn't really keep you in the right direction. But that's why we want to introduce Wink to you, W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste. They're personalized for you. They're shipped right to your door, and they're starting as cheap as $13 a bottle, and it's even cheaper when you use our stuff, which I'll tell you about. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's just your best day of the month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. It's pretty cool. Like, they'll ask you these simple questions that your average store clerk certainly wouldn't or be able to dig into your palate enough. But there's questions like, how do you feel about blueberries? Well, how do you take your coffee? And then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. And then they take it a step further the more you rate them. So the more you rate them, the more personalized they become. Each month there is new delicious wines. Right now there's an insanely popular summer water rosé that's going crazy. There's no membership fees. You can skip any month. You can cancel any time. Why wouldn't you do it? Shipping is covered. And if you don't like a bottle, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love. No questions asked. So discover great wines today. Go to try Wink. Remember, Wink is WINC.com/dynastyblueprint. So that's trywink.com/dynastyblueprint, all one word, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink, trywinc.com/dynastyblueprint for $20 off. trywink.com/dynastyblueprint.
Travis, your fourth tier is a pretty deep group, 10 players in this tier. We won't give away the entire article. Definitely recommend everyone going to check that out. But a couple players I want to hear your opinion on. Running back from Auburn, Kerryon Johnson. What do you like about Johnson?
So Kerryon Johnson, I've been taking a particularly much closer look at Kerryon Johnson lately. And what I like about him, well, it's a lot of things, but I think I like his size. I like his vision. I think I like his ability to play through contact. I think I love his ability to play at different points out of the backfield. A lot of people are going to knock him because he runs almost everything out of shotgun. So they're going to say he can't fit into certain offenses and things like that. But the good news is that Auburn runs a pretty creative offense. A lot of it is out of your, standard college look, like 20 personnel, where you have kind of like an H-back behind one of the offensive tackles, and then you've got your quarterback and shotgun with your running back, and you have three wide receivers. That's basically like what they do two-thirds or more of the time. But how they run that and how they attack the line of scrimmage is creative. It's not limited to just one type of running play, one type of blocking scheme. Yet Kerryon is successful consistently over and over and over. And what I love about him is even if you throw an extra defender in the box, it doesn't really matter. I've been breaking down some stuff here recently with Marcus Mosher and some other people and looking at every single snap of him specifically from last season. And I'm through seven games, through a bunch of plays. I think I'm 170 something carries in, and he's when the box is even, he absolutely kills it and just destroys it. It's when you have a 6-on-6 situation in their standard personnel package, like 20 versus six, like a box of six defenders. It's just not even fair. It's a cheat code. And if you try to throw an extra one in, they'll just pitch it out to the outside and he'll make somebody miss. So he has more wiggle than I think a lot of people give him credit for. And yes, he runs a little bit high sometimes, but that's about the only thing I can really pick on. I think that he has a lot going for him, and I think he can fit in a lot more schemes than people give him credit for. So I think, and he really even has some underrated receiving chops as well. So I don't know what there isn't to like about him. He just carried the load and dominated the top competition in the country this year. Auburn's offense on his back in crucial moments, time and time again. So I think he's exactly what you want to see in a running back prospect.
Travis, one player from this group, this fourth tier, that I have some concerns about. It seems like you're a little bit higher on him. So I would love to hear your take on Anthony Miller, the Memphis wide receiver.
Yeah, so Anthony Miller, I absolutely love. I mean, if you're not familiar with Anthony Miller and his story coming from, basically being a walk-on to being one of the most productive receivers we've seen in college football. I mean, he's got two seasons with more than 90 catches and 1,400 yards and at least 14 touchdowns. I don't really care who you're playing against. And if you're playing in Division I football and your opponents know, hey, that Anthony Miller guy, he's getting the ball. Let's try to stop him. And it just never, ever happens. And I mean, even I think back to I can't remember his exact stat line from the UCLA game. It was just absurd. It's like it's really weird for a wide receiver to be able to do this, but he just carried the team against UCLA. And I think it was like 9 or 10 catches for 180 something yards and a couple of touchdowns. And this kid's a former walk-on and he just has so much confidence. Yes, he probably projects to be maybe a slot guy who can slide outside. But slot wide receiver is not exactly a dirty word, a dirty term anymore in terms of fantasy value. So we saw that was actually a great thing for Nelson Aguilar's value this year. And he saw a lot more of his production in that type of role. So I think Anthony Miller is probably going to be a top 50, 60 pick. You can't deny his production. I'm not sure about his top end athleticism. I'm not sure if he's an elite athlete, but he was a track star in high school. So I would have to believe he's pretty fast. So I'm not really sure what the concerns are exactly with him, besides him just being maybe smaller and more of a slot guy. But I guess my question to you is, what was your concern exactly with Anthony Miller?
Well, for me, I mean, I am a little bit of an ageist, so he's older than most of this class. That is a little bit of a knock on him for me, not because maybe what his future holds, but I just wonder how much of an advantage was that playing against not only lesser competition than a lot of the players from the SEC and Big 12 and so on, but also younger defenders. And then his frame, I'm just not sure. I don't know if that can hold up, honestly.
Okay. And that's fair. I think anytime you try to look at a player who just doesn't really even have an opportunity until they're older, it's like, I don't know. It's really hard for me to knock somebody who just really doesn't have that chance. And he definitely doesn't have a stereotypical track to success. I mean, mm-hmm. when you're a walk-on, you can't exactly come in and be like, hey, I want 10 targets a game. Let's go. So I don't know. I think that's a little bit, I don't know. I get that the concern that he was playing lesser competition and he was older. He should be dominating, but that's exactly what he did. That's my thing. We want him to do.
Can you coach me up a little bit on Auden Tate? I've heard really good things. I think he's going to become a little bit more of a household name here in these next couple of months.
Yeah, with Auden Tate, you're going to hear the word flexible because it just doesn't make sense. Like the way that Auden Tate can bend at 6'5", 225, in and out of his breaks, through the air, just making a play on the ball, doesn't make sense. I don't know how it happens. You don't really see many wide receivers that can be 6'5", move that fast. He's a long strider, but he doesn't really even look like a long strider because he actually keeps his feet moving pretty well. But he's going to go up and get it, and he has that my ball mentality that anybody should have. But if a 6'5" guy is playing bigger than he is with the reach that he has, I'm definitely a fan. I think the questions with him are right now, obviously, he only had 65 catches in college. So we're not exactly working off of a big or healthy sample size here. But if you look at the situation, it was his first time playing in 2016. And then in 2017, he really didn't even have a quarterback, let's just be honest. So I think he's a definite projection just because we don't know what he could do within a hard sample, but he's a freak athlete, and I can't wait to see what he does.
Travis, one of the stories of the past season in the NFL and certainly in dynasty circles was Alvin Kamara, the rookie running back for the Saints, formerly of the University of Tennessee. And Kamara's replacement there this year was John Kelly, who I think is kind of being underrated. This guy can pretty much do it all. What do you think about Kelly?
Yeah, I think the initial concerns with Kelly might be he's a tad undersized, although you would never know that if you actually watch John Kelly play, because he must think that he's actually the biggest man on the field. Like when he approaches the line of scrimmage, you would think that he's like, hey, I'm 500 pounds. You need to get out of the way. He just attacks and he throws people to the ground when he gets a chance and throws people to the ground that he shouldn't be able to do that to. So he plays a lot bigger than 5'9", 205-ish. So it'll be interesting if he actually shows up and he's a little bit thicker than that. So I think he can carry the load. And really one thing that people miss about John Kelly is even though Alvin Kamara was there, he was actually in terms of rushing yards, he was actually the leading rusher for running backs. Even when Kamara was there for 2016, he didn't have the same receiving sample that year. And so that was my main concern coming into this year. Can this guy catch? He had like 6 catches the year before, but he came out and he was like, nope, I'm a feature back. What's up? And he caught 37 balls and I mean, did just fine in that aspect too. So I like him a lot.
I mean, he's a solid blocker as well, right? And some power there too.
Yeah, I'd say so. He just plays. He's gonna make you hurt. He doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to him, clearly. Like he can end up on the ground at the end of the play, but he's gonna get up first and he's gonna make sure that you felt that. So if I was a quarterback and I had that guy in the backfield with me, I'd feel pretty safe.
Travis, your fifth tier is really just showing off how deep this class is from a fantasy and dynasty perspective. If we're thinking about this as a ranking or as a possible draft cheat sheet of sorts, this gets us well into the third round with another dozen players in the fifth tier. One I want to hear about who it seems like maybe you're a little bit lower on than the consensus is the Miami running back, Mark Walton. He had that injury this year, missed a lot of the season, but still decided to declare early. What are your thoughts on him?
Part of that, I don't actually dislike Mark Walton. In fact, in many ways, he kind of looks a little bit like John Kelly. He's maybe a tad undersized again, runs a little angry. He, you know, churns those feet. He looks pretty fast. I'm not sure about his long speed exactly. I'm not sure it's going to be as impressive as we want it to be at the combine. And I'm not sure how good of a combine he's going to have coming off the injury. So part of this ranking is just me believing that his draft stock is not going to be where it needs to be for me to consider him a top asset at the running back position. So I think he could still be a day two pick if everything goes perfectly, but I also think he could be a guy because he falters in some way at the combine or there's injury concerns with certain franchises that they're just thinking, you know, maybe we can wait till day three and he doesn't go until the fourth or fifth round, which would surprise me, I guess, a little bit, but I could totally see that happening. So it's more about the injury and him choosing to go maybe a little bit earlier than it is about his skill set, because I think he actually, I would put him up in the same level of player as a John Kelly almost, but I'm just concerned a little bit with how the NFL is going to perceive his whole injury situation.
Travis, the other running back that kind of caught my eye in this fifth tier is one that you're probably higher on than the consensus. And I agree with you, Justin Jackson, the running back from Northwestern. What are your thoughts on Jackson?
Justin Jackson, we're sticking with the theme of guys who might be just slightly under what you want to see in terms of weight and size for the running back position. But I think you can't take away what he did at Northwestern. I mean, when you see that kind of consistency over a four-year sample in a Power Five conference, I don't know what there really isn't to like with him. He was somebody that could have gone last year. I was actually a little surprised he didn't. I mean, coming off of a season at that point with 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns on the ground, and then he added, you know, several receptions to go along with it. So I mean, when you look at his overall profile, he had more than 100 receptions playing the running back position. He had more than 5,000 yards. And it's not like Northwestern is just a powerhouse that, you know, can recruit the top offensive line and put pieces around him to make it easier on Justin Jackson. Northwestern's just not that program. So I'm not really sure what people don't like. I guess it's just maybe he's a little skinnier than they want him to be. I don't get it at all. So I had him much lower until I really dug deeper into the numbers and I saw this guy never had less than 1,187 rushing yards in a season. And we're not even putting him in the second round discussion anywhere. So I like him a lot.
There was one guy I wanted to ask about, and then I wanted to tell us about another sponsor. I've seen a couple people on the internet that are really high on Deion Kane. Obviously, Clemson has a good track record, the wide receiver position. Could he be a home run?
I would say that Clemson has a fantastic track record of giving us some home runs. I don't think that Deion Kane is somebody that I'm going to be confident at all in putting him in that discussion. I think if you took his production profile and his athletic profile and recruiting everything and put it on any other team in college, I don't think he would be in the conversation right now to be a top guy. And so that's why I dropped him so significantly. I think I had a bias for quite some time. I just assumed he was a little bit better than he was until I really started looking at it and breaking down the numbers and realizing that he's never even been asked to really lead his team. Like, I mean, Hunter Renfrow is being just as impressive as Deion Kane, and he's not even going out this year to be drafted. So I think he was just within that offense. He was a guy who was good that they trusted to make big plays at times, but he never had more than 58 catches in a season and in a program that likes their wide receivers. So I just have more questions than I think I have answers in just like a few months ago. So I don't think he's a home run, and I do think he has massive bust potential if he goes inside the first round of the real NFL draft.
I've mentioned this before. Almost every podcast I tell you guys about Harry's. If you haven't switched to them, their blades are phenomenal. I switched a while back, and I told you before, I used to get all kinds of marks and bumps on my face from using straight razors. So I went to an electric, and then I tried Harry's, and then I am totally hooked. So that's absolutely what I love most about their product. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, and which is exactly why over 3 million dudes have switched to Harry's, including myself. Jeff and Andy were just two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg for razor blades, and they started shaving, and it worked for me. Harry stripped out the unnecessary features like heating blades and a bazillion lubricating strips and all those things, and the unnecessary costs, more importantly, to deliver customers one perfect razor at an amazing price. A good shave comes down to good blades. Because Harry's owns the factory, they're able to deliver amazing quality blades for just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. And all products are backed by a 100% guarantee, which is awesome. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they'll give you a free shaved trial set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/dynasty. All you got to pay for is the shipping, which is cheap anyway. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free when you sign up. Just cover the shipping. Your free trial set will have a really nice weighted razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades, with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel that smells great, a travel blade cover. So to get your free trial set, go to harrys.com/dynasty right now. That's harrys.com/dynasty.
Travis, the sixth tier is another deep one. This gets us down outside of the top 30 from 31, your 31st overall player down to 45. And one player that's a little bit lower on your list than some others is Josh Adams, the running back from Notre Dame. Do you have some concerns about Adams?
Yeah, I think if you look at that offense this year, it was interesting. They didn't really have a quarterback. They've got a really bad quarterback situation. Wimbush is one of the worst in the country. If you look at his, I'm pretty sure he actually failed to hit 50% accuracy on the season, which is just atrocious. So obviously atrocious probably isn't even the word. It has to be worse than that. but they definitely had to rely on Josh Adams and the running game. They didn't really have much else going on at the running back position. So obviously he's just going to get fed. And he's going to be given opportunity. And he had some big plays. I think the one thing I like about Josh Adams is he has the vision to get to the next level. I don't think that he's the power back that he should be at 6'2", 25, but whatever he does, I don't know how he did it in many cases, but he just finds a way to the second level and can make one person miss so that, you know, he can run about a 4.7 40 until he gets caught from behind and doesn't get the touchdown. So I'm concerned about his long speed and his lack of using his 225 at least build. I think he's kind of a bigger back who doesn't have enough speed, who doesn't play with enough power, who will not contribute in the passing game at the next level. So I'm not sure what I really have to get excited about exactly in terms of any elite attribute that he possesses. Are you guys seeing that differently at all?
I don't know. You're kind of bumming me out, though. Adams was a guy I kind of liked as a sleeper. I saw it differently as far as the offense. It was rough to watch. I love my guy there, St. Brown, the wide receiver from Notre Dame. But you're right. That entire offense was just – it was just tough to watch this year with Wimbush. You would think that when your quarterback struggles to throw the ball that maybe you see the running back step up. And that's, like I said, that's kind of how I was seeing it with Adams, but the picture you're painting is not a good
pretty
one.
Glum, yeah.
Right. but I think it has some merit. Like what are the skills that he can bring to an NFL team that's better than running backs that are already on the rosters? And
yeah,
that's, I don't know. Maybe he's a player I need to go back and watch a little bit more of.
Travis, quick question for you. I think we've only brought up one tight end so far.
Yeah.
Do you have a number two tight end, or do you think there's a big drop off? Do you think it's a pretty poor class? I mean, what's your take on, you know, number two tight ends in this deal?
Yeah. So in this class, and I don't even know if we really spent much time on my tight end one in this class, Mark Andrews, who just was fantastic really throughout his collegiate career. But I wasn't really sure, and this has changed even since this has dropped, but Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State, he was actually mentioned last week on the pod that you had with Kyle. But I talked about this, I believe, on the Dynasty Life podcast already. But what he did, even though the level of competition was what it was South Dakota State, he did unbelievable things in a large sample size. And I don't know if you really pay attention to tight end production, but for some reason, tight ends just do not produce in a big way in college. And it's probably because they don't run anything what you might think. And it's just not a pro tight end anywhere really in the college game, because they're like an H-back, or they're really out in the slot, or there's something that just doesn't really fit most of the time. But his junior year, he had 92 catches at the tight end position. Wow. And almost 1,300 yards and 11 scores. And this year he had a down year and only had 1,100 yards and 7 scores. And so if you look at every tight end in Division I, Mark Andrews killed everybody with like 900-something yards in Division I football at the tight end position. And Goddard was like, I'll just have 200 more than that in my down year. So what he can do as a receiver, and the way that he moves with – I don't want to overuse it, but fluidity with, you know, the way he moves – to like, I guess he's like Auden Tate, but like the tight end version. Yet he still packs it in. I think Kyle mentioned this last week, but he somehow weighs like 260 pounds, but he doesn't really look like it. So that's the guy that's rising for me. He's probably my tight end two still. I do have just a little concern with the competition of play, but he can play and he's going to plug in right away. Beyond that, I have questions with Jasicki and Fumagalli a little bit, being a consistent receiving threat. But this is just, when you compare it to last year, it's
not the same, right?
No, yeah. It's not the same thing.
Travis, in tier 7, the one player that I think pretty clearly stands out is Antonio Callaway. If you're ranking just based on talent, he might be a tier 3 or tier 4 player. But most people know the story there. Got into some big time off the field trouble, legal trouble, and was suspended for his entire junior season at Florida. And then I think basically most of the players that were involved in that credit card scam were either kicked off the team or transferred. And Callaway had the talent to just go ahead and make the leap, but it remains to be seen how NFL teams will view him. What are your thoughts on him right now?
Yeah, I was with him. I was hoping he was just going to transfer and get a second chance somewhere because he was great. I mean, he was fantastic early on in his career. I mean, how often do you see a freshman just show up and catch 35 balls for almost 700 yards? It doesn't happen all the time. And every class, every single year, you have 5 or less wide receivers in the country who are freshmen that show up and, you know, start or have a significant contribution to the team in a big way. So he blew up. He's got the breakout edge you want to see. He's got legit wheels. He's not the big stereotypical wide receiver one build, but he also can play bigger than you might think at 5'11 or maybe 6 foot. He's probably not 6 foot, probably about 5'11. So there's a lot to like you said, in terms of player and just overall skill set and how early he broke out and was successful. But I wish he would have gone the way of Darren Carrington, because Darren Carrington, for those of you that aren't familiar with him, he was supposed to be a huge deal at Oregon way back when Mariota was still there. But he just kept getting in trouble and basically his last chance, he transferred to Utah, and he had an amazing season this year, and he's probably going to get drafted because of it. I really wish that would have been the case with Callaway, because I could see him just being completely undrafted and blackballed because the dude just made a horrible, horrible decision. And I hate to see that, but it's like, man, you can't do that and expect an NFL team to take you seriously.
Travis, the final three tiers, tier 8 through 10, that finish out your top 100 are filled with about 40 players. And a lot of these won't be drafted in rookie drafts. They might not even be drafted in the NFL draft. But I feel pretty safe in saying that one of these guys, or maybe several of these guys, will be fantasy relevant as early as the 2018 season. So from your 60th player down to the 100th, if you had to pick one who you could see breaking out or even just gaining value through this pre-draft process, who would that be?
Yeah, I think one of them has already gained some value thanks to the Senior Bowl. And I think you may have even mentioned him last week, but Deshaun Hamilton's already flown up. He's going to be at a different place on my list and everyone's list. There are people already talking about him way too early in the draft. I don't see him getting any higher than he is now. As people, you know, the Senior Bowl just happened, so he's going to live off that hype. He's not going to impress at the combine in any way, shape, or form, and he's going to be a late round pick maybe. But I think he's going to rise based on where I have him. I have him way down, like pick 90 or so on this list, and he's higher than that for me. But I don't want to just talk about him specifically. I think one name that could surprise a lot of people because he's not this high on anybody's list that I've seen anywhere, but I put him up pretty high at the 60 slot, is Marquez Valdez-Scantling. And that name is a mouthful to say.
Yeah.
But the dude, he's Ryan, you'll hate him. He's kind of older. So I'm sorry.
Well, I'm out.
But, and he had a really strange career. I mean, he started out at NC State. And right away, he caught 22 balls, didn't even get in the end zone. Sophomore year, he, again, didn't really have a significant role, but was kind of a big role player they'd asked to make a play from time to time. And so, you know, he transferred and went to South Florida, had a decent 2016 campaign. But really, he took advantage of a huge opportunity this year. I saw this at the very beginning of the year. He was basically it. And so they asked him to really carry the team in the receiving game, and he really balled out. He had 53 catches for 879 yards and 6 scores in an offense with a quarterback that's really a running back in Quentin Flowers as well. I mean, he's okay, and he can get the job done kind of, but he's also barely hanging around 50% accuracy too. He's 6'5". I've seen conflicting reports as to how tall he really is. We'll find out soon, but he's allegedly 6'5" and like 210, which is super skinny. But he is a light version of Auden Tate in my mind. He can make a lot of plays. You're just like, whoa, how did you even get a hand on that? So I like him a lot, and I think he could rise through the draft process. He's going to make a lot of catches that at the combine where you're going to see people like checking their clipboards. Who in the world was that? I can't even read his name. So, but yeah, he's one guy I would bet on.
Okay, he's a nice one. I don't think I've ever even heard of him. So if he hits, I'm going to remember this and definitely give you credit for that.
Yeah, he's old, so don't have too much confidence.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Cooper Kupp became a thing, right? And he was older.
Yeah, he did. And he was like 400 years old and FCS wide receiver. So longest of long shots, and he showed up. So
yeah, I mean,
we'll see.
Really, though, I kind of mentioned it earlier with Miller. My concern, what happens is maybe people hear or just see that age or hear people talking about, oh, let's avoid Ridley because he's old, or avoid Miller, avoid Cooper Kupp or Kelvin Benjamin or whoever it might be. Every year there's one or two of these guys who are older prospects. And the concern there goes back to breakout age, some great work that John Moore has done over at RotoViz years ago. So the concern is not they're older, so they're going to have a shorter career or anything like that. It's they put up, you know, we can assume they put up some big time numbers against younger defenders, against players that were maybe not even as mature or developed as they were. And can they continue that when they get to the NFL and they're, you know, matched up against the best athletes in the world, essentially.
Yeah.
That's always going to be a concern for me. But once they prove that they can handle that, like Kupp obviously did his rookie season, then it's no longer a concern. So yeah, Kupp is still a couple of years older than Mike Williams or Corey Davis or Juju Smith-Schuster. But I don't really care about that at this point because he's proven that he can play in the NFL, and that what we saw in college certainly was not a fluke.
Exactly. Exactly.
Good point.
So Matt, here's what we're going to do. Every time we have a draft centric, a draft focused guest, really the next several weeks of the off season, we're going to try to end the show with a one round rookie mock draft. And Travis certainly fits that bill. And as we always do, whenever we have any kind of mock draft, we're going to let our guests go first. So we're going to have a one round mock, 12 picks total. We'll just alternate and we will let Travis go first with the really, really tough selection here.
Yeah, I think as we've already talked about, this isn't a crazy difficult selection. I'm going to surprise the world and go with Saquon Barkley out of Penn State.
Can't believe he did that.
Right?
I thought I was going to get him at two.
We're just going to roll through these. So, Matt, you've got a tough choice as well. 1.02.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a very easy one for me. I think he's really, really good.
All right. So I kind of teased this earlier that once you get to 1-3, it's wide open. If you ask me tomorrow, I might choose a different player. But I think right now I'm going to go with Sony Michel as the 1.03 pick. And we'll go back to Travis for the fourth spot.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how fast Sony Michel has just flown up the board. He wasn't even in the first conversation until the college football playoff, but I do like him a lot, and I think consensus would probably put him around three. For me, I'm probably going to have to go with my favorite wide receiver in this class, and that's James Washington. I think any time somebody, and I've said this several times, it's just any time somebody can catch over 200 passes in their college career and average 20 yards per reception on that large of a sample size, and not just actually be a deep threat, somebody who can show and put this on display at Senior Bowl that he can kill everybody on the intermediate and shorter routes as well. I love James Washington. I think he's going to be a stud really early in his career. And the only reason we're looking at him funny is because he's not 6'1" and 210. He's 5'10.5", 210. So he just kind of looks goofy and we don't know what to do with that, but he's fantastic.
Yeah, he seems like a player that's been tough for people to find comps for. And I don't know that that's really important necessarily. He produced and we can't deny that. All right, Matt, you're up with the 1.05 pick.
Yeah, I'll take Ronald Jones. I think there's a very good chance he's an NFL first round pick. Maybe in those last 10 or 12 spots to a playoff team, I could see him finding himself in a really good situation right off the bat. Again, I'm a little concerned. Is he going to be a TD producer at the next level? But he seems like there's a lot to like there.
Yeah, he'll certainly be a fun player to watch no matter what happens. I almost took Cortland Sutton with the third pick. So at six, he's a pretty easy pick for me. He's my top wide receiver in this class as of now. I do think he's fallen off, at least in perceived value, a little bit over the past year. But I'm pretty happy to grab him in the middle of the first. So back to Travis at seven.
Yeah, so a lot of people aren't going to like this probably that are listening to this podcast because we want to revolt against the big draft machine. But I think it's going to disappoint everybody but surprise really nobody when Calvin Ridley is the first wide receiver taken off the board. This year in the real NFL draft, some team is going to invest heavily and want him to plug in and be their lead option, or at least a 1B option right away. And I think at Alabama, he showed he could be exactly, you know, that a lead option, somebody who's got legit route running skills, legit everything skills that you want to see at a wide receiver. Yeah, he doesn't have the perfect build that we want to see. And yeah, he broke out later because he just started later in school. But when he had the chance to really dominate, he did that this year. If you look at his stats compared to other Alabama wide receivers, he had 63 catches for 967 yards and 5 touchdowns. The next closest wide receiver on the team in terms of receptions, I think this is hilarious, by the way, because he can't catch the ball either. It's Bo Scarborough is the team's second leading wide receiver. They just didn't go to anybody except Calvin Ridley. So it's another situation where we're like, hey, stop that guy. We'll stop the whole team. Nope, can't do it. Okay, so I don't know what's going to happen to him at the next level. I'm not sure his ceiling's ever a wide receiver one in fantasy, but at the 1.07, I'm fine taking Calvin Ridley here.
I've seen him mock to the Bears in the first round so much that I'm already just kind of associating him with being on that roster. We'll see if it plays out like that. Matt, the 1.08 pick.
All right, good point with Ridley to the Bears, and I don't think he can almost – I almost think he can't get past the Ravens with the Aussie connection with Bama and the need. You were nice to me. You gave me the 8 pick, so I just basically take by default Nick Chubb before the I get the last guy in the tier. I'll take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, as I said earlier, I don't necessarily see that tier ending at 8. So I still like a few of these options at the 9 spot. I think for now I'm going to go ahead and take a guy who kind of seems to be the darling of the draft slash dynasty community lately. I'll take the Maryland wide receiver, DJ Moore, at 9.
Oh, man. I love that pick right there for you, man. That's
Did I steal one from you?
Yeah, I couldn't come on this pod and not mention DJ Moore. It's just somebody that I'm excited about quite a bit. I'm sure you are too. What's your favorite thing about DJ Moore and just his draft profile overall?
I mean, he's another guy we talked about. Who was it? About John Kelly, who can just kind of seemingly do it all, but he's underrated.
Yeah.
Moore kind of feels like the wide receiver version of that. And to see some comps to Steve Smith, wow. I mean, that has to get you excited. So he's not quite in that underrated category anymore, at least for those who are really, really keep up with this stuff, as obviously all of our listeners do. He's a guy that's being talked about on Twitter and again, in the draft community just every day, basically. And I know, I believe it was Daniel Jeremiah said that he had a top 30 grade on him. So he's a player that could also sneak in to the end, to the late first round.
Yeah. And I think he should. He's got kind of a funky, almost running back build as well. But
yeah,
I think that's the only weird thing about him. I think everything else is just fantastic. And if you want to look at his market share, as everyone has already talked about, I mean, his last year, he basically was 50% of the team's offense. So it's just kind of crazy what he's brought to the table.
All right, Travis, your last pick of the draft, the 1.10 pick overall. Who you got here?
So I don't really have another pick, so I can tip my hand a little bit on who this is between. The Auburn fan in me wants to take Kerryon Johnson, and I've been watching a lot of him lately, and I'm more and more impressed with what he does against even boxes and maybe an extra defender in the box. I think what he did was fantastic, but I think what Rashad Penny did this year was even more impressive. We somehow, as a collective Devy and Dynasty community, missed the fact that even as a backup, Rashad Penny had 1,000 rushing yards for San Diego State. And this year, they just had the most productive running back in NCAA history leave, and he was like this scrawny 5'9", 178 guy. Well, enter Rashad Penny, who's 5'11", 220, feature back size. I don't know why we thought anything else was going to happen besides him just exploding, because he ran for 2,200 yards this year and 20-something touchdowns, and he really didn't catch the ball a ton. But really, when he did, he was fine at doing so. So I'm not really concerned with a whole lot with Rashad Penny, besides maybe the level of competition he faced. But I'm not sure you can do much more than run for 2,200 yards at the college level. So I'm excited about Rashad Penny. I'll take him in the first round every time.
Yeah, he's another guy that can kind of do it all as well. He didn't get a ton of, as you mentioned, a ton of work in the receiving game, but I think he'll be fine there. He can help in special teams even as well. So he will be on the field for sure. Matt, the 11th pick in the draft, your final pick. I think I know who you're going to take.
I was leaning towards Johnson, but I'm going to take Christian Kirk. And I've seen him mocked late first, early second. I think there's a good chance he'll be a top 40 type player. And he's kind of boring. I mean, like, to me, he's got the high floor guy, that he's probably a wide receiver 2 in fantasy, maybe a 3, but you start him a lot and you can win a lot of games with those guys.
Man, I didn't see it coming,
huh?
Well, I didn't see it coming. That's not who I thought you were going to take. I thought you were going to take Alden Tate. I wanted Christian Kirk at 12. And I do have, I'm not totally on board with Kirk. I know some people like him much higher in that first round at this point in the offseason. So I have some doubts myself, but I definitely wouldn't call him boring. He's pretty exciting to me. It's more about, can he hold up in the NFL game? You know, you've seen some Percy Harvin comps and things like that. Okay, you left me with a tough decision, Matt, to finish off the draft. We've already talked about Kerryon Johnson. I'm not really an Auden Tate fan, so I'm going to leave him for the second round that we're not actually going to do. I think I'll just take my guy. He's on my Twitter avi right now. Equanimeous St. Brown. Travis, we mentioned the horrid offense there at Notre Dame this off this past season. So I'm almost just ignoring this season for St. Brown. It was a waste, and I'm really glad he chose to go ahead and declare and not go back and repeat that next year for his senior season. So I'm excited to see what St. Brown can do, especially even at the combine. Maybe he can start rising up the board like I think he should. I really like the work of Matt Miller. We've had Matt on here before. Matt just released his first full seven round NFL mock draft, and he actually has St. Brown as the, I guess, second to last player taken in the entire draft. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's way almost down there. Yes, almost Mr. Irrelevant. I don't know if that's a good representation of how teams are valuing St. Brown right now, or if that's just Matt's current eval of him. We'll have to get Matt back on here to see, but for now, I'll grab St. Brown in the late first and acknowledge that he's a player who could either really rise up in these ranks or completely fall off the board if he does fall to the seventh round or maybe even goes undrafted. Well, Travis, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for dropping all of your knowledge and participating in our mock draft. And go ahead and make sure all of our listeners know where they can find your work.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at FF_TravisM. I love interacting and just learning from people that have all sorts of different perspectives, that watch all sorts of different parts of the country's college football, you know, with the West Coast, East Coast. I want to know all that you know. So just come find me on Twitter for sure. But I write over at Dynasty League Football and the Fantasy Authority, and really just appreciate the opportunity that I've had to have a platform there to share all the research and things that I've learned and my hot takes from time to time and my rankings and my lists. And so I appreciate that. But the Dynasty Life podcast has been a lot of fun too. Both Ryan and Matt have actually been on that podcast, but I get to do that every week with Justin McCaslin and Andrew Frechette. And it's just been a blast to talk about our dynasty lives and how that fits in with our real lives. It's been a lot of fun. I love doing this. And so thanks again for having me on, guys.
Oh, absolutely.
Is there any separation between dynasty life and real life?
What's the difference?
You know, I think there probably should be. I think there's less of a divide than there probably should be most of the time. But
yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Travis, one more thing before we go. Are you going to have another version of your top 100 this offseason at some point?
Yes, I definitely am. Last year, I waited till like right before the NFL draft to drop one more look for us to just get excited about where these players could land again. So yeah, that will be coming. I'll take some time to process the combine data, look at the new guys that are flying up the boards, like, you know, last year's Kenny Galladay and things like that, and then just kind of reshape my list and have another one out in early April, probably. So I'm excited to get that out.
Yeah, I'm excited to check it out as well. And until that comes out, definitely recommend everyone checking out Travis's work over at DLF and at the Fantasy Authority, especially his top 100 rookies of 2018. Thanks again for joining us, Travis. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.